Hi, it's Diane. It is December 3rd, and I'm with the Wednesday afternoon group. We've got Christine and Julie and Bonnie so far, although Christine just fell off. Maybe she'll come back in a second. So want to just do a quick check-in. I know Bonnie at least was on for systems and structures last time. I don't know if the others of you were on other calls or listening to the recordings, but just curious how things have been going and what's new with everybody. Bonnie, you want to check in first?
Yeah, I did the consequences, the three consequences, about setting the table, and it wasn't done. And I said, well, you'll need to come up with three consequences. Anyways, it was, that's a nice way of getting things done, because he kind of looked at me like, what? And then I gave him a time off for 5 minutes to come up with three. And after the 5 minutes, he said, well, I guess a stern talking to would be one of my options. And I said, well, that was a good try, but we can try to come up with another one. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't need to, because he then proceeded to set the table without consequences. So I thought, oh, that is a nice way of getting things done without me screaming. Like, that was good. So thank you.
Well, and the other thing that worked out of that, Bonnie, is that you didn't have to be the bad guy. It's kind of like,
yeah,
you know. Well, and I guess I would encourage you to find, it sounds like it worked even in the minute where you wanted him to do something and you said, okay, if you're not successful, what are some consequences? You could also do that like in a family meeting or in a conversation when you're not in the heat of the moment, which could potentially take even some more pressure off.
Yeah.
So good for you. How did it
thank
feel
you. That was it was like a big smile on my face, and like for days afterwards, I thought, wow, this is going to work.
Well, and I can't promise you it's going to work every time, because
I know, but it was
another
choice I have.
Yeah, absolutely. We're building the toolkit, Bonnie. That's what it's all about. So Christine, how have things been going for you? I noticed you fell off in your back.
Yeah, I knocked the thing off the thing rocker. It's been going pretty good. It's like whenever I reach out and try and get help and those kinds of things, it seems like things mellow out for a while, and then, you know, we have flare-ups, but he's been in a good place. It's piling on. He's a junior, and he's just started his SAT tutoring, and he's gearing up for a college advisor, and so I think he's starting to feel the pressure, but I also think that's probably good. But right now it's no complaints, I guess.
What have you noticed is different for you?
I guess I feel like I am kind of not letting go, but not reacting or trying not to react to some of the little things that would bug me, and just to, I guess, take a breath and just not be the crab all the time.
Well, and it's hard because you feel like you're cracking the whip 24/7, and it's nice to have that little breather to even not have to be cracking the whip. If he's feeling less pressure, then you're feeling less pressure, and would encourage you to kind of, you know, take that in and enjoy it. And you know, it's so hard for us because we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. A lot of times when we get into those places where our kids are coasting okay, that we're kind of like, okay, wait, when's the next thing going to happen? And we forget to enjoy the fact that, okay, I can take a deep breath right now. Things are a little bit more calm, and I need to be thinking and preparing, you know, for what might be coming with finals or with whatever else. And I need to take the opportunity to take some deep breaths and to enjoy myself a little bit and maybe do a little self-care or something like that. That might be a little miracle for us, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm getting a little nervous. We have finals are January 13th that week, and we've got, you know, the holiday break and then 2 weeks in finals. So I know that will ramp things up again.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so Julie, what about you? How have things been going at your place?
Good. I had kind of, well, my goal 2 weeks ago was to work on a system and structure around video game time, and honestly, that never happened, but it seems like things are a little bit calmer most of the time around the house, although the last 2 days we've had meltdowns in the evening time, and I, you know, as a getting more curious and getting more information, there was a substitute at school, and then I find out that he's telling me he should be allowed to be able to stay home by himself. He's 10, and you know, a 10-year-old ADHD kid is not ready in my mind to stay home alone. I tell him you got to make better choices, because you know, when you make good choices, you can show me that you're ready to stay home alone. And trying to just be calm with him and repeat myself the same story over and over again. But it's hard when he's crying, you know, and there's big tears falling down his face because he had a bad day, you know. But I just try to stay calm with him and keep going.
Well, good for you.
So I think this whole managing triggers topic today, I think, is where I am right now. So it's perfect timing.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that's a great transition, and I think that it sounds like it is. What do you find is working so far?
Well, I let him be a little bit. I let him, on Monday, we were going out to dinner, and he didn't want to go out to dinner because he just wanted to be home. And I just let him sit out for like 5 minutes, and he was able, him and I went out and we talked, and he sort of explained what was going on and why he was so upset, and then I kind of reflected back on myself and thought, yeah, he everything has been sort of out of routine today, and so maybe I shouldn't have forced this whole dinner thing, but as an adult, you know, I had made plans, and so I wanted to follow through on that, so it's tricky. It's tricky figuring out the right thing to do in the moment.
Yeah, well, and I think that's part of it, is the in-the-moment piece of it. And so, you know, it's one of the tools that we like to use, I'll just kind of plant the seed, is, you know, is getting really clear about your values. And so it's like, if you have one value, I have a client who, she has a value around fun, but she found that her family wasn't honoring that value enough. And so for a month, she said, okay, every decision she made, she was going to look at that value and say, okay, do I do X or do Y? And it was just, which one would honor my value of fun more? You know, and
okay.
So it's like, would this be more fun or would that be more fun? So it's kind of like, you know, maybe you approach it from the same perspective where you figure out, okay, I'm going to use this particular value or these two or three values to kind of help me make the decision. And then that'll help you to choose, because it is difficult, because a lot of times, you know, as parents, particularly the one conflict I always hear is like the conflict between the value of having our children do well and be accomplished and be successful and the value of having fun or, you know, being more connected and those sorts of things. And we see a lot of conflict in that. So
right.
A lot of times it's just maybe you take turns. You know, last time I honored this value, this time I honor that value. Just an idea.
Thank you.
And someone else, I see Bonnie. You switched.
Oh, that was
phone.
Me. I switched
someone
over.
But somebody else joined us from 443 area code, and I don't know who joined us. Did someone else join? Oh, somebody who has us on mute, perhaps? Well, I'll just keep talking, and hopefully they'll let us know that they're here.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, yes, I can. I'm sorry, who is it?
Hi, it's Larry Katz, sorry.
Hey, Larry, how are you? It's Diane.
Diane, how are you doing?
Good. We were just doing a quick check-in to see how things have been going. Do you want to check in and let us know how things have been going in your place?
Still hectic. yeah, it's still the same, you know, ups and downs, and trying to get the work done for school and stuff, but it's tough.
Yeah. Well, and it's a hard time of year. It's difficult to kind of get our kids going, and through the rest of the semester, it's a lot of times they're worn out, we're worn out, and it's how do we get enough energy to get through it? So I noticed it looks like Katie joined as well.
Katie, no,
yes, I'm on, Diane, but I can't really talk because I'm in my car, so I have to mute out,
okay.
But I have you on the phone, okay?
Okay, great. All right, just wanted to acknowledge that I saw you there. So, okay, so did I get everybody for a check-in? Bonnie, Julie, Christine, Larry? Yep, I did. Great. So let's take a minute before I start with our topic for today and take aim. So we want to get really specific at the beginning of the call, kind of what area of focus do I want to pay attention to? You know, what challenge? We've all got lots and lots of challenges in our lives, in our kids' lives. We know we're going to be talking about triggers, and I know, Julie, you said that this is a perfect topic for you today. But, you know, pick one area, one challenge, and have that be your framework for our conversation today. It just makes it easier as we're talking to kind of focus in on one particular area. You can always change if something, you know, comes up as we're talking through. But and you want to be as specific as you can. So it's not just, okay, I'm working on helping my child with homework. Let's be really specific if it's about helping your child get started on homework when it's a subject that they don't want to do, if it's about helping your child to keep the momentum going through the end of the semester or prepare for finals if you've got an older child, something like that. But so take a minute and figure out where you want to take aim, and then we'd love to hear from each of you where you're focusing in the next couple of, through this call. Julie, you want to go first?
Sorry, it took me a minute to find the mute button. I think one of my triggers is with my husband. Sometimes I have an expectation or I'm thinking that he's going to have done something when I get home, and I get home and it's not been done, or he's so that can kind of set me off and put me in a bad frame of mind for the whole evening. But I'm not I know we're talking about our kids, but it's also.
No, I think it's a great example because I think that's, you know, a lot of times we tend to get more triggered with our spouses, whether they're ADD or not, you know, because we tend to be a little bit more relaxed. We might be a little bit more on guard with our kids because we want, you know, we're conscious about, you know, not losing it. So I think that's a great one. So it's just specifically your expectations around him helping around the house in the evenings before you get home.
Yes. So, yeah, if we had had a communication or talk and he said he would do something and I get home and it hasn't been done, then I'm grumpy.
Great. So I just, you know, keep an eye out for a blog I just wrote on exactly that
okay.
topic.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Okay. All right. So, Christine, where are you going to take aim?
Well, they pushed my trigger, or pulled my trigger, I guess, last night, is between my two kids is he comes and, you know, it's later in the evening, sort of after dinner, and it seems to be a pattern, and his sister's 14, and, you know, he comes down, and he just engages with her, and she starts screaming at him, and then he's yelling back, and I think he's trying to kind of be fun, and he'll give her a whack on the rear end or, you know, touch her or whatever, and she's tired of him. He whacks too hard. You know, it's supposed to be fun and friendly, but it's usually too rough. And so then they start screaming at each other, and then I start screaming at them. It's the last thing I want at that moment. You know, now by then I'm tired, and it's, you know, end of the day, and I was thinking as I was looking at it, the incident last night, and I just, I wonder what would have happened if I just didn't say anything as they were going at it.
Yeah, that's what I think. Great getting curious. That's always the first tool I love to teach people. It's like, okay, start by just getting curious and you know, and come up with some ideas of what you might do before you decide what you might do. And who knows, that might be a good thing to try next time. Okay, so you're taking aim on the interactions between your kids, particularly when they start to get annoy each other, which ends up creating a need for you to intervene.
Right.
Okay. Bonnie, what about you? Where are you going to take aim?
Well,
I have a lot of buttons, and I'm working on those because of that reaction that just boom. And I guess mine is the his organization. Like I'll tell him, like, oh, this needs to be done, this needs, and he will. The first thing isn't done, so after I've given him time, I know that wasn't done, so I can pretty well assume the other things weren't done, and I go, ah, Molly, and then I go with my cycle of the same rampage,
Bonnie, help me to be specific. Is when you make a request and he doesn't follow through, is that what you mean?
Yes. And so I think I have to help him by taking aim. I want to help him get organized with him being able to figure, like, these need to be done. I guess that's how. Is that wrong?
So can I encourage you? That sounds like a solution, which is, okay, the problem is that he's not following through when I make requests.
Yeah.
And your solution is...
And then I throw everything in
the list
that,
or something like that. Right, exactly. So I'm wondering whether you just stay in the whole, I'm taking aim on this challenge I have, which is that he doesn't follow through when I make requests. Is that, can you stay in
that
space?
Yes.
Okay, great. Larry, what about you? Where are you going to take aim?
Well, I'm in the car, but I guess, can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep.
Oh, okay. My thing is getting to bed on time and finishing homework beforehand, and the opposition to doing the nightly routines before you go to bed, and so you start at 8:30, and then all of a sudden it's 10:30, and still not in bed. That's my thing.
Yeah, good. Okay, so it's you know, the evening routines and getting them done in a timely fashion so that everybody can get to bed at a reasonable time, so they can get sleep, so they can start the day over again. So it's your challenge is familiar to, I'm sure, a lot of us, Larry. Thanks. All right. So today we're going to talk about managing triggers. And this is, anybody who knows me knows that this is like one of my topics that I talk about a lot, mostly because I tend to be, I have, you know, they talk about having buttons. I think I was born with like this big giant button. My buttons get pressed pretty easily. And so I've spent a lot of time really working on this particular area, and it's been such a savior for me in terms of interacting with my kids, because if I find that I can stay calm, then I can parent in a very different way. And sometimes when we're talking about triggers, it's our own triggers, and sometimes it's our kids' triggers. And so you may have a kid who's a hothead or has meltdowns pretty frequently, and so I'd encourage you, as you're kind of thinking about this, you think about your own triggers, but then you also think about, you know, what triggers your child and those sorts of things. The reason, so this is actually, this is session 7, and we're going back through the critical response areas a second time. And the critical response areas we're starting back with is activate the brain. And the reason that this is managing triggers fits in activating the brain, because is what happens in our brain when we get triggered is actually a biological thing. And it happens to us whether we're ADD or whether we're not ADD. It's literally, you know, it's the fight or flight reaction. It's a chemical reaction. It's an automatic sort of thing. And so understanding the biology of triggers is an important part of helping you to manage the triggers. So, again, you know, it's a normal reaction that happens to us. We feel threatened. We go into threat mode, and I'll talk a minute about kind of how to escape threat mode. But it happens, and it happens for us, for many of us, it happens really, really quickly, and a lot of times in a way that doesn't feel like we have any control over it. So it's important to kind of know that. When we talk about triggers, we want to look at two different things. We want to talk about prevention of triggers, and we want to talk about management of triggers. And with both of those, it's really important that we really even understand and know what the triggers are. And so what I really encourage everybody to do, either for themselves or for their child, is to come up with a, you know, to do some writing or some journaling or just even taking mental notes if you're not a writer. But I call it, you know, a trigger log, and really kind of paying attention to what triggers, when triggers. I have a client who has a 9-year-old, and we had their daughter was having real bad meltdowns, and did some journaling and just paying attention and writing down, you know, every time she had a meltdown, just kind of noticing what had happened just before, what was going on, where were they, that sort of thing, and found out that the majority of her triggers were happening either when she was really hungry or really tired. And it was great information because they knew then that they could do some prevention of, you know, after school, she's really hungry. I can bring a snack with me when I pick her up so that she's not waiting that extra half an hour in the car. I mean, it's stuff like that. If you understand what the triggers are, you can do some preventive sorts of things. And so, you know, Larry gave the example of nightly routines. If you know that moment when, you know, it's like, okay, it's time to turn everything off and go to bed, is a transition. And our kids, you know, ADD kids often have a really difficult time with transitions. If you know that that's a trigger for your child, putting a system in place where you give them a 5-minute warning and a 10-minute warning and a 20-minute warning can often help. It was funny, my son was trying to get off the computer the other night, and I was in the middle of something, and I had given him a 10-minute warning, and I came back down, and I said, okay, it's time to get off. He goes, but Mom, you didn't give me a 5-minute warning, you know, so it's, I'm into this system, and he's used to the, you know, the extra 5 minutes, and, you know, so, but part of prevention could be a system that you put in place. Part of prevention could be just even knowing what your triggers are, your child's triggers are, and avoiding them. I talked on the call yesterday about a trigger I have, which is like looking at the online system for school, because I'm like always afraid I'm going to see a 0 or an F or something that I don't want to see. And so, for a long time I avoided it, and now what I've done is I've delegated it, and it's my son's job to go into the online system, and he brings me the information. And so, you know, I'm not sitting by myself. The other thing that I do, and I don't know if I should say this on a recording or not, but I sometimes I'll have a glass of wine before I look at the online system because I know I'll be less stressed by it if I'm, you know, a little bit more mellow. And, you know, it's about knowing yourself and knowing your triggers and paying attention and knowing your child's triggers, if you're talking about that, to do some prevention. The second part of this is trigger management. And one of the articles that you have here attached in the further learning is the 4 steps to escape the threat cycle. And this is a really great tool that you can use. It's printed out, you know, after our call today, or if you've already printed it out, you know, I'll go through it step by step. But there's really 4 steps to this. The first one is just knowing and understanding your triggers and noticing when you are triggered. And that's a muscle. You know, you have to exercise that part of you that goes, oh, yay, that's right, I'm triggered, because it's so automatic, and you may not even realize that you've gone into threat mode, that you're in fight or flight, that you're really, you know, you're really upset, you're really triggered, your button's been pushed. What happens when our buttons get pushed is that the part of our brain that's the problem-solving part of our brain, which incidentally is the part that also has executive function for our kids and for us, actually shuts down, because all of the blood rushes to the primal part of our brain so we can run away, and the blood rushes to our feet so we can literally run away. And so when we're in that kind of crisis mode, the part of us that says, hey, yeah, wait, you decided you weren't going to yell at your kids, you don't have access to that part of your brain. And the part of you that goes, well, it's more important for me to stay connected to my kid than it is to get the table set, we lose track of that part too. And so it's really part of the biology of this fight or flight mode, both for us and for our kids. And if you or your kids have executive function challenges, it's really important, because that part of the brain is already pretty stressed out because it's got some challenges. When you add a threat or an intense stressful situation, the part of you that's able to problem solve, that's able to be creative and connect to those values and those intentions is literally shut down. So again, the first step is to notice and manage your triggers. The second step is to reclaim your brain. You know, so you want to take a few deep breaths. take a time out, drink some water, do something to kind of calm your brain down enough that you can get back to, you know, to neutral so you can problem solve and say, what do I want to do from a clear head rather than what am I going to do to fix this? You know, so you're, instead of in search and destroy mode, which is where many of us go when we're under threat, to, okay, problem-solving mode, which is, okay, what do I want to do about this, which is a much more calm, cool, collected way to do it. The second step, then, is to reclaim the brain. The third step is to choose a perspective. So, Julie, I'm going to pick on you for a minute because you and I have had this conversation before about your expectations around your husband. And so I'm imagining, and I'm making up part of this, so forgive me, but it's, you know, I come home, I ask him to take out the garbage and make sure the kids were getting started on their homework, and I come in the door, and neither of those things are done, and I'm triggered. And so yeah. If I take a few deep, you know, my natural, is that, does that happen at your house?
Exactly.
Okay. See, it's happened at my house before, so it's familiar. But, you know, so you come in, and it's like, okay, instead of going, oh, I can't believe this, what a loser, he won't even help me out, this is terrible. He's not helpful at all. All he does is whatever he wants to do, blah, blah, blah. You know, you know that that's a trigger. You reclaim your brain, and then you choose another perspective. So in this instance, another perspective might be, wow, he must have had a really busy afternoon because I know he wants to help me out, and he didn't have time to do that. Or, oh, well, his ADHD brain wasn't able to remember that I'd asked him to do that. You know, maybe I should ask him if he wants, you know, maybe I should offer to help next time, or maybe I need to shift my expectation and say, is it realistic on a school night that I expect him to take out the garbage? I mean, I'm making this up, but you're trying to find a different perspective that helps you to feel more productive in this situation. Because what happens is that if we're feeling threatened, we're going to go back into fight or flight. If we can find a thought that helps us to move the situation forward, you know, something about Larry and the nightly routines, it's like, wow, my kids are having a really difficult time getting settled down and getting to bed. It's very different than, I can't believe this, these guys never listen to me, it's always a nightmare, won't they ever do what I need them to do? And it's just choosing a perspective, and it doesn't have to be, you know, we don't want to go all Pollyanna on us because it's hard to do that, but you want to choose a perspective that you're willing to consider is true. And the one I like the most is, wow, my kids are having a really hard time, dot, dot, dot. You know, my kids are having a really hard time remembering to keep their hands to themselves. My kids are having a really hard time following through when I ask them questions. Because you let go of the why, they're having a hard time, and it's just, they're having a hard time. And once you have that new perspective, then you choose to act based on that perspective. So that's the fourth step, act from that perspective.
So can I ask a question real quick? This is Julie.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
So do you recommend that we sort of prepare these perspectives in advance so that we can sort of pull, you know, go back into our little toolbox? Oh, yes, I was going to have a different perspective this time. Is that what we should do?
I think that's a great idea because if you know that it's a trigger and it happens all the time, I mean, I personally would use a mantra. And, you know, it's,
yeah.
And actually I have my mantra at my desk. And it's a blue post-it note that says, assume best intention. And it's, you know, whenever I start to get triggered, I go, okay, wait a second. My kids want to do the best they can. Their dad wants to do the best that he can. You know, but whoever wants to do the best that they can, and I'm going to assume that. And that's kind of my go-to mantra because it helps me to go, if I assume that they're doing the best of it, that they're intending to do their best, and that's what's coming out of it, it helps me. But so maybe it's a mantra that you prepare in advance, or maybe it's, you know, I think it depends on how much you get triggered, right, Julie? Because if you're, like, you're over the deep end, you're going to want to have, you know, like even a stone in your pocket or something that it kind of reminds you and triggers you, because if you get really revved up, it makes it really hard.
Okay.
So lots of stuff there on triggers and trigger management. What comes up for all of you guys as you're thinking about this idea of managing threats and triggers and that sort of thing?
Well, this is Julie again. I'm thinking about myself, but I'm also thinking about my husband and my son, and you saying that the blood leaves the front part of their brain where they're trying to make good choices, so that it's like we can't, almost physically can't make a good choice in that moment, or it's just much harder. I think it gives me a little bit of more understanding and empathy for it, and that information I can share, and hopefully we can have a conversation about it between me and the kids and my husband, and just more understanding of, like, hey, I can see that you're having a hard time right now. Let's maybe a code word or that mantra you suggested. I think those are great tools to use. So.
Yeah, no, and actually, I thank you for saying that, Julie, because what I didn't mention is that code words can be a really great tool for prevention of triggers. And Elaine has a kid, I can't remember which one of her kids, has a really difficult time with the word no. And so whenever a disappointment is coming and she knows that it's coming, she uses a code word. I think it's bubblegum. And she'll say bubblegum, which means, hey, I need to tell you something you're not going to want to hear, so I need you to get ready because you're going to be disappointed or whatever it is. But it's just kind of a way of, instead of, you know, to prepare and to prevent a meltdown, word is that you could use it something like when somebody's getting upset or the conversation's getting heated, you could, you know, we use the code word rope. You know, it says, like, if somebody's getting to the end of their rope, so let's just all, you know, take a deep breath, let's calm down before it escalates too much. Great idea. Thank you, Julie. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts? Christine, what comes up for you? I know you're going to get off in a minute here.
Well, I think, like you say, kind of wondering where they're coming from, and for my instance is, wow, you haven't seen your sister all day, or, you know, kind of, it's his way of wanting to interact with her, but he's got to, or be, you know, be curious as why it's happening the way it's happening, or it's so rambunctious.
Yeah, so the curiosity can help you to come up with a different perspective, which is, wow, he's so excited to see his sister. He's a little bit tired. He's not noticing kind of how physical he's getting. He's having a hard time. He's having a hard time keeping his hands to himself. You know, whatever it is.
Right.
But getting curious and noticing can be a way to kind of find another perspective, which helps to manage the trigger. It sounds like.
Mm-hmm. I'll try it.
What else? Bonnie, what about you?
When you were talking about that, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to think about outside of me in those, as far as choosing the perspective, because it's, oh, how is it affecting me? Like, me. And I liked how you said, well, and some of the answers I thought, oh, God, I could never say that. But I could be willing to consider this to be true. Like, that, I liked that line. Like, okay, this could be possibly true. Like, this one I could put some weight onto without getting more triggers. You know what I mean? So I like that.
Right, it's really...
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to go all the way to kind of believing 100%, but you're willing to consider that they're trying to do it and they're having a hard time. You know, it's like, maybe, possibly, there's part of them...
That'll be my mantra.
Okay. Maybe, possibly, kind of. You're just trying to get, that's the goal. You want to change the perspective. Because here's the thing, we get triggered, we're making up all kinds of stories in our head. They're disrespectful, they're never going to make it in life, I can't believe they're doing this, I'm a bad mom, or they're just terrible kids. You know, whatever the story is that we create, we might as well create a story that makes us feel good.
Right. Let me try that.
So if you'll play with me a minute, I'd love to have you go through an exercise with the threat cycle. So I'd like you to kind of really think about a particular situation where you do get triggered. And maybe you go back to the one where you took aim. And so let's just kind of, you know, take some notes, and we'll go through this, and then we'll reflect and say, you know, what's my trigger? What typically happens? What do I notice in my body? even, you know, it's like I know when I get triggered, the hair stands up on the back of my neck and I start breathing shorter, and I'm sure my face probably gets red. But, you know, just what do you notice? What is it that triggers you? And then the second step, so once you're aware of your trigger, the second step is to reclaim your brain. So what's something that you know helps you to calm down? Is it a few deep breaths? Is it actually leaving the room? And if you do that, is time out one of your ways to reclaim your brain. I would encourage you to always say, okay, I'm going to take 5 minutes, I'll be back, and not just escape from the situation, which is not, you need to make a commitment to reengage. So is it a timeout? Is it a few deep breaths? I love water. Somebody told me that there's some biology behind drinking water, that your brain can't be triggered and drink and soothed by water at the same time. They say that you're in that animal part of your brain, and when you drink water, the animal in your brain says, oh, we're at a water hole. Everything must be safe. So I have clients who just walk around with water bottles all the time when they know they're going to be triggered. So the second step, once you know what your trigger is to, you know, take a note of what might you do? What are some tools that you have that would help you to calm down in that moment? And then the third step is choose another perspective. You know, so what are you willing to consider is true in this situation? That will help you to move forward the action. Because the reality is that neither flight nor fight are very productive. You know, you want to move from fight or flight into act. So what's a perspective that you can take that's going to help you to move the situation forward? This is the third step. So what perspective would you take? And then the fourth step is to take action based on that new perspective. So what action would you take in that situation if you were willing to consider that it's just really hard for them because they're really excited? What would that allow you to do? How would you handle the situation? So. Did that make sense? Does anybody want to share kind of your thoughts of going through that exercise and with a concrete example?
Well, I can. It's with my husband, it's to do with his work. He just kind of puts that ahead of everything. And if there's something that we're planning on doing, and he'll say, "Oh no, I got to work," I know I immediately tense all up, and I clasp my hands, and then that wave comes with all of my baggage, and I'm ready to go for the juggler. So sometimes I if I can't get a hold of them, that kind of helps me cool down a smidge. And sometimes I want to just shut the thoughts off. So I kind of pretend I didn't hear it, for lack of something else, until I'm able to take it and be more productive in my response to them as opposed to just screeching. And so that's my first two. And then I guess now with this choosing, what am I willing to consider? Well, maybe he's choosing to do this because he wants to have it so the family would go on out to dinner or something, a treat. Maybe I can think that.
So can I stop you for a second, Bonnie?
Yep.
So it sounds like I'm willing to consider that my husband's doing this. He's making this choice because he thinks it's going to ultimately help us more than doing anything right now is what I'm hearing you.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe, I guess, does it feel better to be more specific and talk about, maybe he has this plan for us, or does it feel better to just say he's doing this because he knows it's going to help our family?
That would be more productive for me if I could say he's doing this for the productive of the family.
Yeah.
That would work. Yeah. That would make me feel better.
Yeah, so if you have that perspective that he's making this choice because he thinks it's going to ultimately help the family, that allow you to do? How would you act differently?
I know I would be less tense, and my breathing would definitely come easier. And I think also in the long run, my husband would be expecting me to be screaming at him, so I would also get a smile out of my that he's not getting. You know what I mean? I have that control didn't. Like that.
Right. So you're it's a win-win-win because you're staying calm. You're not getting stressed out. You're not yelling at him, so he's staying happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that feel?
It feels positive and hopeful. I'm not to say I could do this all the time, but I could practice.
As I say, are you willing to consider that you might be able to do it sometime?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
So when do you think you're going to try it, Bonnie?
I'll start right after here, after this. After these sessions. I do try it today. I'll try it on something else. It probably won't be the work issue, but I have a lot of triggers.
So Larry, I'm curious: is when you think about triggers, is it more about your triggers or your kids' triggers?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that, please?
Oh, yeah. So when you think about this topic, is it more about your own personal triggers or is it about your kids and their triggers?
I guess it's more about my daughter and my wife's triggers. I could kind of control my triggers longer than they can control theirs. So when they both get triggered, they're fight or flight on both of them, my response is flight, and the both of theirs is fight. So when they both get going, it's kind of hard because once they're triggered, it's hard for them to stop.
So is there something on the prevention side that you think might work does it go from 0 to 100 like a match on a keg, or is it kind of start to escalate and escalate and escalate and you can see it coming?
Yes, it escalates and escalates and escalates.
I'm wondering whether there's something on the prevention side, whether there's a code word or
actually, when we had a session with Elaine, we were discussing that and about kegging out between my wife and I. We just had one last night, and I kind of blame myself because I should have tagged Katie out a lot sooner than I did. So then it was the three of us going at one another, and it made it worse. So
Larry, can you explain tag out to the other folks on the call in case they haven't heard that before?
Okay, I'm sorry. So, like, if my wife and daughter have lost it or they're getting to that point, I kind of go in and either say a code word or touch my wife a certain way and get her out of the situation and take over for her because I see that she's going over the edge. And this way I can try and calm my daughter down and not overreact on my own, because I'm not there yet.
Right. So, what in this was new for you, Larry?
What was what for me? I'm sorry.
What was new for you in this conversation today?
Well, it wasn't kind of new, but it kind of reinforced everything that once you reach your limit and go over the edge, it's really physically hard to come back to the rational state. And but you kind of gotta see what you can do to get there and keep practicing to do that.
Yeah. The other thing that I would say, you know, Larry, you and Christine and Bonnie have older kids. I mean, the more transparent you can be about your own triggers and your own experience. I mean, I remember very distinctly one night when I really lost my cool with my daughter, and I took some time, came back, and sat down and said, "Wow, I'm really sorry. I totally lost it. It was like, you know, there was this, like, something unworldly had taken over my body. And I just really lost control completely. Isn't it interesting? Have you ever had that happen to you? What did you notice?" You know, and we kind of had this interesting, calm conversation about what happens. And I think it's a really great tool when, especially we do it, because then they can see that it's normal. Because as I said at the beginning, this is something that's biological. This is not something that, you know, is, it happens to everyone. It happens differently. So it's like, are we fight, are we flight? Might be different between two different people. The amount, you know, what triggers you or what doesn't trigger you might be different. That we tend to get triggered more when we're more tired or, you know, it's been a long day. I always joke about the fact that, you know, it's like if your daughter comes to you on Friday and says, "I need cupcakes on Monday morning," you know, you're like, "Oh, cool, great, I can do that." And but if they come to you at like 8 o'clock on Sunday night and say, "I need cupcakes tomorrow," you know, you get triggered. It's just a very different kind of experience. You know, so it's just really, the more you can get transparent about it, I think it really helps our kids to see how normal it is, which helps them to begin to manage their own triggers in a different sort of way. So, Julie, what comes up for you?
Well, I'm just thinking about my triggers. And I just got to figure out a plan of how I'm going to calm myself in the moment. I'm not really aware of what happens to me when I'm being triggered. I'm not aware of my physical reaction, so I'm interested to see what that's like. I want to try to remember to focus on that in the moment. And then I think I'll be able to, I'm curious about it. I think it'll be interesting. And I think a few deep breaths is probably a great idea for me. I think that would be helpful. That's something my mom always told me, and I forget to do it. So I'm hopeful that I can keep your mantra in mind, assuming the best intentions, because I know that Mark and my kids, they do want to do well. I know that. I just need to remember that.
Yeah. So, are you a journal-ish kind of person, Julie, by any chance?
No, I have been, but I haven't in a really long time. So, I could try to get back into that.
Because I think it does really help to even, like, once a day, you know, just take a few notes and say, you know, did I get triggered today? What triggered me?
Yeah.
You know, so it really, the more you can kind of become aware about it, talk about it, what did you notice? What do you remember? It's easier to do it in the rearview mirror to start than it is to kind of do it in the moment, because it is really very, especially if you've got a very short fuse, have you heard the word neuroplasticity?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's like neuroplasticity. You know, we get those ruts in our brain where we're, you know, we go from A to Z immediately. Well, threat mode is like that. It's like, you know, we pass go. We do not collect $2,000. You know, we just go a million miles an hour into threat mode. And so it's really important to kind of pay more attention and notice and get curious about what is it about this and ask yourself the question, you know, so – what, can I coach you around this for just a second, Julie?
Sure.
So the example you were giving was when he doesn't help around the house and he doesn't do the things he says he'll do, right?
Right.
So what is it about that really bugs you?
I think what you were saying at the beginning about somebody choosing, or even me choosing a value, and make a decision based on a value, I think his value is fun, and my value is not. I think that there's a place for that, but
it bugs you because he chooses fun over helping you.
Yes, or helping the kids with schoolwork or whatever it is. I had set up this sort of system. Every day we were going to come home and read for 20 minutes. And so then I come home and somebody's on the computer with him, and like, what? I thought we had talked about we were going to read for 20 minutes. First thing when we got home, I was going to cook dinner and the kids were going to read. But I felt like he was kind of hijacking them so that they could have fun.
So what's the thought underneath this? If he's choosing fun over homework, what does that tell you?
Well, it makes me feel I'm disappointed and I'm frustrated and I feel not valued. I feel like I'm not important, or the things that I think are important are not important to him.
Right, and if he loved you, .. he would. Does that
yeah.
go that far?
No, but there's. I guess it's an angry response.
So there's some resentment.
Yes.
Why do I always have to do this? Why is it my job?
Yes.
Why do I always have to do the bad guy? I'm the homework lady, and he's the fun guy.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, and what does it say about you if you pick somebody? I mean, what does it say about you if you have to be the bad guy all the time?
What does it say about me? It says in my mind, I'm the responsible one.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a lot of weight to be the responsible one all the time.
Yes.
What would you rather have instead of 100% responsibility?
I would rather have more balance. I'd rather have a partner who had similar goals, I guess, for our kids.
So if it was more balanced, you're saying yes to responsibility because you have to be the responsible one. What are you ultimately saying no to? What would you do more of if you had less responsibility? What would you have more of?
I would sit on the couch and watch TV for an hour or something.
So how would you feel if you were able to kind of how would you feel if you were able to kind of sit and read and watch TV? And
I think I'd be more relaxed and more patient, and I think I'd be a better wife and mom.
Okay. So what if I told you that what you really, so what if I told you is that you really want, is that it's not about the homework, it's about you wanting to feel relaxed?
Yeah, okay, yes. Because I feel like in many areas with the kids and him, I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right, right. And so if you made it a goal to find time each week to be more relaxed,
mm-hmm.
what would you do differently?
What would I do to relax, or what do you mean?
What would you do differently? Yeah, what would you do differently?
I think I would just sit on the couch and read a book, sit with the kids and read a book, or go take a walk around the neighborhood.
Here's the thing. What often happens with resentment, it's because there's a need of our own that's not getting met. And so if we can focus on getting that need met, in addition to the different perspective about the resentment, the two of those together can be like this home run, because not only am I shifting my perspective and feeling less bad about what's going on, I'm also figuring out what I really want, which is more time to myself and more downtime and more time to have, maybe it's fun, maybe it's relaxation, whatever it is for you. Does that resonate?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So let's do our wrap-up. I'm on page 29. And definitely would encourage you guys to do the further reading. There's a couple of great webinars on the threat cycle. There's all kinds of articles, and I did a video tip, that sort of stuff. So, but let's answer our four questions. So what did I focus on or pay most attention to in the call today? And then what's my clarity or takeaway from today? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? So take a minute, jot some notes, and I'd love to hear from a couple of you. So what you're going to do from here? Feel free to jump in whenever anybody's ready.
This is Julie again, and I focused on my triggers, and when I, like I said, when I get home and some expectation that I had has not been, what I want to do, which is, I guess, the realistic action step is I want to journal on this and, like, make some notes about what actually is, what's physically happening during these triggers, and then maybe make some notes of what sort of a mantra is or something I can say to myself in that moment to sort of reset my mind into it, put it into a different place. So I do have a journal at home in my bedroom, so I will dust it off and start writing.
Good for you. Bonnie, what about you?
Well, first off, what the prior woman, I forget, I didn't catch her name, but what she was saying sounded much like my own home, so that was helpful for me as well. The thing I focused on was choose a perspective. That was something new for me. And that will be my takeaway. I know that with practice, I will be a lot less tense on those things. My realistic action steps, I guess I'll have to breathe, and I like the water business. That I thought, ooh, that sounds like a plan. And how can I set myself up is to be hopeful, I guess, is that's what I, like, I want this to work, as opposed to going down that wave of, I'm hopeful that I can make this positive.
So what's going to get in the way, Bonnie?
That I won't be able to reclaim my brain, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, I don't know if I said this on the call today, but I have a client who walks around with a water bottle all day long. And it's
I like that.
It's her reminder that if I start to get triggered, I'm going to take a sip of water. And there was a period of time where before I said anything to my child, I would take a sip of water, because it's like I know that what comes out of my mouth is going to be not what I wanted
not
to
say. Not nice, right.
Larry, what about you? Any takeaways you want to share with the group?
Not right now. I kind of zoned out there a little bit. So
no worries. I see Katie joined us back in here. I don't know if you have any reflections. I know you were on for a little while earlier. It may be putting you on the spot, and you may still be in a place where you can't take us off mute. All right, everybody,
yeah.
Thanks for a great call.
Thank
We've
you.
We've got one more call of the year. We're going to be in 2 weeks. And enjoy your weeks. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Bye-bye.